Hi there, Billy Hindle here, the voice of Alice Dyer in the Magnus Protocol. As part of the Magnus Archive's 10th anniversary, Rusty Quill is hosting a special Magnus Live show at the upcoming Crossed Wires Podcast Festival in Sheffield. Join co-creators Jonathan Sims and Alexander J. Newell on the 5th of July for a new iteration of our live show, Statement Begins, where you can hear fan-favourite statements such as Anglerfish, Red Live, and gain exclusive insights into the creation and history of the show straight from the creators themselves. You can buy your tickets now, including limited numbers of meet and greet tickets, from crossedwires.live or the link in the description of this episode.
Na, noch keine Pläne fürs Wochenende? Besucht die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt in Freiburg mit euren Mädels, der Oma oder dem Knallertypen von nebenan. Wir lieben alle Jahrgänge. Entdeckt unsere interaktive Ausstellung bei der Erlebnistour mit Audioguide und einem Glas Sekt und genießt im Pavillon die ganze Welt von Rotkäppchen. Die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt, nur eine Sektlänge entfernt.
Hello, and welcome to this Magnus Archives special episode where we find out how well Jonathan Sims and Alexander J. Newell know the world that they've created. I'm Chioma Walioba, and I play Annabelle Kane in the series, and I have in front of me a selection of questions from a quiz which was run for the Magnus Rap livestream on Twitch. Let's jump straight in, shall we, with season one, and start putting them through their paces. What is the name of the first episode of the Magnus Archives?
Oh, hello. Yes, I know that one.
Yes, it is Good Morning, Mr. Scary.
Well, now here's the question. This is me immediately attacking the terms. Are they counting trailers and teasers?
Whoa!
Because the first episode of the Magnus Archives is, of course, Anglerfish. However, there was the teaser. So what do we think, Johnny?
But they weren't titled.
They weren't titled. It was just a teaser. I'm going to reserve the right to give two answers, which is teaser if someone's playing, you know, Trixie, or Anglerfish if it's the actual answer. Do you concur, Johnny?
I do concur.
The answer to that, of course, is Anglerfish.
Yeah.
Yes!
Yes!
Next question. What was the name of the second voice to ever appear on tape in the Magnus Archives?
The name of the second voice...
I remember it was 13, it was Alone.
If it was 13, it was Alone, I think it would be Katie Davison.
That sounds right.
Was there not an appearance before then?
No.
When's Lost John's Cave?
No, Lost John's Cave is number 15.
Oh, so that's after?
13, I believe, is the first time you hear a second voice.
I think it's Katie Davison, but I feel like
I'm
already starting to expose how little attention I pay to our own projects.
I'm going to back up Alex's answer here and say it's definitely Katie Davison.
Go on.
Well done. The answer is Katie Davison as Naomi Hearn.
Hey!
Yes! Yes! I'm not a bad person! Yes!
Later in the series, John takes an axe to a certain suspicious and mesmerising table. In which episode did this table first make an appearance?
Pretty sure they're referring to the sound desk Big Bertha. When did we start using it, Alex? That would be episode 3, Across the Street.
Although I couldn't tell you where in the episode it's mentioned in that monologue.
Oh, no, Graham has it. This is like centerpiece. He's using it for coffee and stuff.
But I can't remember at what point it's mentioned is what I mean. Like whether it's like just a buried reference.
No, she's in the flat. Like she's just kind of staring at the table being like, ooh.
Yeah, it was an explicit reference. Yes. Yeah, you are correct. I'm glad you're here. Otherwise, you know, I might actually be in trouble on this quiz. The important thing is that right now, even though we're on the same team, none of us is winning.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Brilliant. The answer is episode 3, Across the Street.
Yes! I'm kind of getting genuinely competitive now and want to get a perfect score. I want to be that person and I don't think we can.
Let's find out.
Next question. Who leased an office at £100 Mall?
£100 mount, that's the Underground Lightner library, so it must be Lightner.
Ah, no, no, hang on.
Because it's the Pall Mall Club one.
Yeah, no, I get that. I can't remember. Did they temporarily lease the place to then break into stuff, or was it Lightner?
No, because they didn't break into stuff. They were doing repairs and stumbled into it.
Yes, no, you're right. It was repairs. It was repairs. So
I'm not 100% sure, but there's no one else I can think that it would be other than Jürgen Lightner.
No, you're right, because the repairs, they weren't leasing the place. They were contracted.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, Lightner. Lightner's a good answer.
It is, of course, Jürgen Lightner.
I'll be honest, the entire premise of this episode is going to quite upset Mike, because I told him that I'd looked over these questions to make sure they were accurate, and I didn't.
God. The second you're off the clock, Johnny, the absolute second you're off the clock. God.
And I didn't.
God. Okay.
You should be happy, because it means this episode can happen, otherwise...
Yeah, I guess.
I couldn't legitimately do this quiz.
All right, okay.
I'm helping in a very real way.
What are the first words spoken in the show? Not counting trailers.
Oh.
It would be test, 1, 2, 3?
I don't know if it's 1, 2, 3. It's definitely test. I think it might be test, 1, 2, 1, 2, test, or something.
I feel like I remember saying a 3.
In which case, then, it'll be something like test, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Because at the time, I would have found it hilarious that you said 3.
Let's just say test. Let's go, you know.
Fine.
First words, test.
Go on, let's go with test.
I'll give that to you. But the full answer is test, 1, 2, 3, right.
Okay, oh, cool. So we're technically correct.
Yeah, we weren't given a number of words to get, so I think that wins.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
All audio should start with the words test, and if it doesn't, you're doing it wrong.
Let's move on to season 2, shall we? Nice and easy one to start with. Who gives the first statement of season 2?
I think that's the archivist, isn't it? Because he goes into the tunnels.
Now, hang on. So start season 2. We've done Jane Prentice.
Tunnels are revealed.
Is it not Martin talking about finding Gertrude's body?
That's episode 40. That's the last one of season 1.
Yes. Okay, I've cheated the season break there. Okay.
So there's 40 human remains, and then there's 41 too deep.
Okay, good catch. So in that case, then, I feel like it isn't you.
The archivist goes into the tunnels and, like, is saying, oh, I went into the tunnels and it was spooky.
I'll have to defer to the man himself, but I feel like I'm missing something there.
Of course, it's our very own Jonathan Sims.
Oh!
Yeah, we were setting up the whole conceit of season 2. We were like, oh, he doesn't know what's going on. He's paranoid.
Daisy and John share a recurring nightmare. What familiar object does this nightmare involve?
Oh.
I know that it is a plot point that Daisy realizes that the dreams are weird because of the t-shirt changing.
Yeah, but that's season 3.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a t-shirt.
No, it is, because she recognizes his shirt is like, I'm with stupid in the dream or something.
Yeah, no. It is. It is the t-shirt in season 3. But season 2, a recurring dream. I've completely blanked on this.
We can work this out logically. This is Alex using pub quiz time.
It's a knife.
No, hang on. Right.
It's a knife.
We know that you only get a shared dream with the archivist after they've given a statement, right?
A knife.
So therefore, what was Daisy's first statement-esque thing?
That would be Hard Shoulder. It was the one where she encountered Brecon and Hope.
So is it the coffin that is the recurring dream because of it being in the van and so on?
That would have been great foreshadowing, but I don't think we did that.
I'm a bit stumped by that one. I think it could be coffin, or someone's been wording their questions weird and it's actually like the t-shirt or something.
A knife.
But make your call, Johnny. And if it's knife, I'm just going to go ahead and say...
A knife.
I'm going to say coffin.
And Alex is correct. The answer is the buried coffin.
I'm winning.
All right. Okay.
I'm better than Johnny at the thing that he primarily wrote.
Next question. What building was previously located on the site of the Magnus Institute?
Oh, Millbank Prison.
Also, I believe the Royal Chelsea Military Hospital?
Yes, above ground. And also, it depends if they want to say the Panopticon.
Millbank Prison was, like, the Panopticon. The two are kind
I'm just trying to get at the wording, you see, because no one checked these questions beforehand, Johnny, you see, so we've got to be really careful.
Quiet, you. yeah.
Millbank Prison slash the Panopticon.
slash the Royal Chelsea Military slash Hospital.
The Royal Chelsea Military Hospital.
Fantastic. Straightforward one there. That's Millbank Prison.
Yeah, okay. That is the right answer. We're just hedging. We're hedging furiously is what we're doing.
In which episode does Melanie ask about the other Sasha?
Oh, that's... So, not Sasha reveals herself in 79. So it would probably be 78, I want to say.
I can't believe I have to admit this. I'm going to have to just give up my lead and pass this back to you on. I legitimately don't know.
Is that the kind mother?
I don't know.
I'm going to say the kind mother.
I have to confess, out of all of the seasons, season two is the one I've least had to revisit.
Also, like, this one specifically is really difficult because the statements were recorded quite separate from the dialogue stuff. So matching the two up in my head is tricky. But I think it was the kind mother. I'm going to give that, going to roll them dice.
Good job there. It is, of course, episode 77, The Kind Mother.
Yes!
Yes! Yes! Come on!
Round three. First question. Which key character dies at the end of season three?
That would be Hope.
Well, hang on.
Pretty sure Hope's the most important character that dies at the end of season three.
In the unknowing, are you sure it's not Tim? No, it won't be Tim, because he didn't die.
No, I mean, Tim does die, but, like, that's a pretty...
Tim didn't die, I don't think.
Like, it's not super important to the story, is the thing.
No, you know what it'll be? It'll be Orsonov.
Yeah, no, Orsonov is...
It'll be Nikola Orsonov.
Yeah.
There's no way it's Tim, because who cares?
Who remembers what Tim did?
I don't even know his surname. Pretty certain it's, like, Meredith or something.
Sorry. Who died at the end of season three? Tim Meredith. We just had we've just got a huge backlog of his voice recordings and have been, like, just creating this whole artificial...
I mean, ultimately, I feel like this question might be making light of all of the people who were in that wax museum.
Yeah.
Who got turned temporarily suspended into wax. So in a lot of ways, the answer is everyone. Everyone died, but definitely not Tim.
Just to be clear, in terms of us getting points, I think we're saying Tim Stoker.
I mean, points are more important than, you know, being liked. So yeah, let's go with Tim.
Luckily, we've managed to sacrifice both.
The answer is Tim Stoker.
I do wonder what the body count in The Unknowing was. It was quite high.
In my head, I would say like 100 and something, probably.
Yeah, I was thinking in the hundreds.
Let's move on. Who is the big bad of season three?
I mean, if you look at how it's written, it's kind of Tim.
That would be my good friend Jessica Law playing Nikola Orsinov, the evil mannequin.
Well, hang on. This is me overthinking.
Oh, otherwise you could say the stranger?
This is the thing, is do we want to go higher level?
Mm.
I'd go with Orsonov, but I want it on the record that, you know, that's a very broad question.
Also, this is the season that Elias reveals himself.
Exactly, so do we say Elias as the big bad? But I don't think Elias... Depends how you define big bad. Elias is sort of the bigger bad, but I don't think he's the big bad. He's a big bad.
I'd say the big bad is the stranger via Nikola Orsonov.
Seconded.
Absolutely correct. The answer is the stranger or Nikola Orsonov.
Woo!
I'm getting real worried. I think we're having an easy ride and then someone's going to pose something really specific and we're not even going to be able to guess it.
Next question. What was different about the intro music to episode 119?
Oh, yes.
I don't know, Alex, help. I've never listened to an episode of this show.
So, episode 119 was where I co-opted the intro music so that instead of being da 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 da, it was ba ba da ba da ba ba da 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 da, because it was the unknowing music.
Oh, clown music.
Because the unknowing started in the episode prior, so we wanted to set a real awful tone straight off the bat. And so I think that it's playing the unknowing music, which is my final answer. I think that's the answer.
Yeah, it's my final answer as well. Our final answer.
Absolutely correct. It is the Calliope music that was playing instead of the Magnus theme.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Calliope. Yeah, yeah. I did freeze for a moment there. I was a little bit worried. I was like, oh no, is it some really obscure like editing thing that I forgot?
Next question. During season 3 of Magnus, Ross T. Quill saw a wealth of new fan art come through our postbox and on our socials. But there was one thing that was sent to us more than anything else. What was it?
In season 3?
I mean, I had no visibility over the P.O. box, so I'm going to probably say teeth.
No, it won't be teeth. It won't be teeth. We did get more biologically hazardous waste than you might think that had to be immediately destroyed. Please don't send stuff like that. That's not cool. However, I don't think it'd be teeth. So season 3 was... Oh, no, it'd be Tim kayaking. Season 3, fan art, it'd be Tim kayaking. It's got to be.
Okay, I'll go with that.
I've lost all confidence now. Okay, give me a second to think. Because the issue is I haven't been administering the postbox either. Because the clown core stuff for Orsonov didn't actually come in season 3. People started paying attention to that in season 4. There was a little bit of a delay. So I think it's going to be, yeah, Tim kayaking. Do you concur, Jonathan Sims?
Yes, I concur, Jonathan okay. Sims. Wait, no, I concur, Alexander J. Newell.
Tim kayaking.
Ooh, not so good. The answer is actually art based on the book A Guest for Mr. Spider.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, okay, that's annoying. I really thought we could get a perfect score on this one.
It's all right.
Wasn't teeth, though. Thank God.
Final question for season 3. What was the name of the film produced in episode 110, Creature Feature?
I mean, there were loads.
But what were they filming in Creature Feature? They were filming...
Oh, balls, I don't remember. Like, the thing is, I made up so many film titles for that, and I really, like, some of them of, like, Agents of Orion and the crawling ones have stuck with me.
Well, we had to workshop a bunch of them.
Oh, it's Spider in a different language. Like, it begins with a Z or something.
Oh, no, we can get this one. We can get this one.
I don't know if I can. I don't remember
I'm confident
what...
we can get this one.
It's like... Zemalotta.
Zemalaya?
Zemalaya?
If it begins with a Z, that's what's coming to my mind. Oh, I feel like we're homing in, though.
Yeah, I know, but I don't think I'm going to land on it. I'm going to say Zemalaya, the spider.
Okay. Clearly, we need to brush up on our web knowledge. The answer is Widow's Weave.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Because the Z one is like the original weird thing that like it's
that Ligorio saw and then wanted to emulate in the
Yeah, like I'm thinking of like the faux kaiju thing.
Yeah, okay, no, I'm with you now. It was a remake of an obscure film that no one else ever actually thinks existed.
Yeah, but that said, I did not remember the name Widow's Weave at all. That was not even remotely in my head, so
no.
On to season 4. In which island group did Selasa pick up the camera?
Oh, no. Oh, no, you're asking me to remember some Google Maps search I did 2 years
That's
ago.
Really tricky.
I honestly don't know.
Okay, if we just eliminate every island on the planet that it wasn't, we must end up with the right answer. Probably wasn't the Galapagos. I don't think it was the Seychelles.
Don't think it was in the Hebrides.
Probably not.
Canary?
Isle of Man, right out.
No, I'm pretty sure I sunk the Isle of Man.
I got nothing.
I'm going to say the Canaries. I don't believe it is, but I'm also drawing what's known to the traders and blank.
Ooh, the answer is actually the Maldives.
Oh, the Maldives.
You sunk the Maldives? The Maldives
no,
are
I sunk
lovely.
One of the Maldives.
I can't believe you sank the Maldives.
I sunk a single Maldiff.
You sunk. Oh, God, Johnny.
In Mag 147 Weaver, when Annabelle Kane runs away from home, what type of shop does she hide out in?
That would be an abandoned chip shop.
She hides in a chip shop?
Does she? No, it's based on a chip shop. Mm. The actual structure, I'm thinking, is based on an actual brick chip shop I saw years back.
It's not the taxidermy office, is it?
Oh, no. This is the one near the beach. It's a square brick building. In the real world, it was a chip shop. I cannot remember if I changed it and made it some other bullshit.
For some reason, my memory is triggering on, like, a puppet shop or something, but that would be...
No, it wouldn't be it's that. Not a puppet shop. It's too obvious.
I wouldn't have allowed it to be that, I don't think.
Maybe I probably did change it from a chip shop because that's too similar to...
Sounds to me like what you should say is chip shop, right? And then say that the quiz just doesn't understand the depths of your real world knowledge.
A surf shop. I'm going to say a surf shop.
There's no way it's a surf shop.
No, I don't think it is a surf shop.
You'd never have said a surf shop. Never in a million years.
But like a gift shop? Like a tourist information shop, maybe.
You might have to just go with chip shop and just...
Accept my... No, I'm going to say tourist information shop.
I'll defer to you on this one because I ain't got the right answer.
I mean, I don't think I'm right, but...
Well, don't say that as you lock the answer in. God.
Perhaps you should trust your gut, Danny. The correct answer was chip shop.
Shit! I told you, you'd have got it with chip shop. Oh, Johnny, mate. Mate.
It's fine, it's fine. Everyone can hear that I did know the answer. That what I lacked was not knowledge, but self-confidence.
Next question. After the founding of the Magnus Institute, how many years passed before the ritual of the Watcher's Crown was completed?
That would be 200 years, I believe.
I think it's 200 on the nose, isn't it?
Yeah, 1818 to 2018. I mean, technically not, actually.
Wasn't it like a month or so off or something?
Well, no, because the ritual that's conducted is not technically the Watcher's Crown. The name The Watcher's Crown is kind of a red herring.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
But the question still works.
Impressive, yeah. 200 years, 1818 till 2018.
I'll allow it.
You'll allow it.
How many times in season 4 are John and Martin in the same scene together?
Oh.
Oh, okay. Okay, now we can work this one out.
It might just be the once. Like, well, okay, it depends on...
It depends. Do we count...
Oh, no, it's not just the once. There's a bunch of them, like...
No, here's the thing, right. Let's discount the trailer.
Okay.
Because that's not a scene. That's a trailer.
There's You Died.
Yep.
There's The Final Lonely.
You're doing this in a very awkward order for me.
Yeah, there's Let's Gouge Out Our Eyes and Make Out. There's two scenes in 160. Good Cows and... Oh, no! The question is, how many scenes are there between that?
Okay, let's run through it in order.
I want to say 7.
Okay, because the question was for the entirety of season 4. So going from the beginning, right. You Were Dead is definitely one.
Yep.
There's a meeting between John and Martin where John's like, listen, I need to warn you about Peter Lucas. Is that the same one as the You Were Dead?
I don't know. I feel like there are either 1, 2, or 3 meetings between You Died and Let's Gouge Out Our Eyes.
So I know what I'm like, structurally speaking. I would expect me to have allowed 3 scenes between the two of them, then Endgame.
Then let's say 6 or 7. Pick your number.
I am going to say 6, because that way if it's 7, we can say, oh, they've counted the trailer, so, you know.
I'm going to say 7.
Oh, Johnny, I hate you. It's going to be like 12 or something.
Okay, I'll give that to you. It is 5 episodes. Episode 124, Left Hanging. Episode 129, Submerge. Episode 154, Bloody Mary. Episode 159, The Last. And episode 160, The Eye Opens.
So 5 episodes, 6 scenes. So it's a moral victory for us, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, for us, because we both said 6.
Yeah, it's a moral victory because we both definitely said 6.
Final question of season 4. How many ribs does John possess at the end of season 4?
Oh no, how many ribs does a human possess in general?
At the end of season 4...
Quiet, Johnny, I'm counting my ribs. Ow. Ow.
Technically, at the end of season 4, he's only missing 1.
But how many ribs do humans have? I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm counting, but it just hurts.
I'm going to say 21, because I think we normally have 22 ribs. He's lost 1 to Jared Hopworth, and 1 is outside his body, but he still possesses it.
Let's lock that in. It's the kind of thing Johnny will know, and I'm hurting now, because I've been poking.
I categorically do not know how many ribs a human has.
I can't keep poking my torso. It's starting to hurt.
Can't give that to you, I'm afraid. The answer is 23. However, one of these is in a cupboard rather than his rib cage.
Yeah. So what, a normal human has 24 ribs.
Okay, there we go.
Alex, you should have poked harder. I can't believe
it. It hurt! I've legitimately bruised myself.
Perhaps you should pay more attention to human anatomy. Oh well, on to season 5. Gertrude inherited Fiona Law as an assistant when she became archivist. What is it that saved Fiona from being a victim of most, but not all, powers?
Thump. That's the sound of somebody fainting.
Yeah, she just passed out all the time, didn't she?
Let's see, there was Emma, Fiona, Michael, and I want to say Sarah, and one of them survived lots by fainting, and if Fiona Law was the long-lived one, then that would be it.
Because that's the thing, is the one that I'm confused on here, because I'm not 100% is, there was one of them who kept passing out, and then there was the other one who survived quite long by making everyone else go first and was in fact tormenting.
I think that was Emma.
But who's the question referring to then?
Fiona. Like the question, I believe, is... Yeah.
All right, I'll give you that one. Fiona fainting. Fainting. Yeah.
Terrific. The answer is fainting.
Yeah. There you go. Good job. I liked that as a story point as well. That was a nice little, like, I really liked that. It just resonated.
Let's move on. How many characters does John successfully smite in season 5? Name them.
Oh, God. Right, so first one is Jude Perry. No, first one is the Not Sasha.
Yes.
Then there's Jude Perry.
Yes.
Jared.
Yes.
Doesn't take out Oliver.
No. Nope.
Doesn't take out Simon.
No. Nope. Are we then on to Helen?
No, there's definitely someone before Helen. The whole Basira Daisy thing is like between them. He doesn't do any smiting there.
That's moot. He doesn't do anything with Salacia, obviously.
Isn't the one that kills Trevor.
Nope.
No one gets smote in Slacers. I feel like there's one I'm missing.
I think it might go straight to Helen.
Really? I feel like there's another. There is another.
The reason I don't think there is because, again, this is me revealing all my story structures. You get 3 beats and then you get your big bash.
Yeah.
So you've got 3 beats there and then you've got Helen. I don't think there is another one because we'd be hitting it too hard.
And he kills Elias, but he doesn't smite Elias.
If they count Elias, then fair enough, but I don't think there's anyone pre-Helen.
I might say 4/5 if you count Elias.
Last chance if you think there's anything before Helen, but I don't think there is.
Yeah, I can't lay my finger on it.
I think it's the 3 we discussed, then I think it's Helen for a 4th.
Oh, Breacon.
Oh, does...
Yeah, Breacon asks to be got.
Yeah, there is a mercy smite. You're right. I can't remember. We do grant Breacon that, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's 4, then it's 5 with Helen, so then you're into 5/6.
No, I think it's 6/6 because it's Not Sasha, Jude,
yep.
Jared,
yep.
Breacon,
yep.
Helen.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, 5/6 if we count Jana.
5/6 then. Good catch on the Breacon one. I'd have missed that.
I almost did.
Lock it in then, 5/6.
Yeah. 5/6.
The answer is 5. The Not Them / Not Sasha, Jude Perry, Jared Hopworth, Breacon, and Helen.
Yeah, getting answers wrong on season 5 is a particularly egregious error. We kind of got a bat for 1,000 right now.
Which tea type does Martin hate?
I want to say oolong.
Yes.
Or Lapsang Souchong.
Oh, ha. Ooh. I think it'd be oolong.
I'm going to say oolong. It's one of those details that, like, I threw in. It's important, I think, that as a character point, Martin dislikes a particular type of tea.
Absolutely correct. The answer is oolong. Next question. The statement of episode 189, Piers, includes the sound of 3 men in fine suits laughing. Which Rusty Quill member is the uncredited performer of said guffaws?
Oh, I think I know this one. I think it's Tim Meredith. This actually makes a lot of sense now because someone mentioned Tim Meredith getting an uncredited performance in season 5. And I was like, what? He did what?
If it is, A, I did not allow it. And B, I know that Elizabeth would have put a request out knowing that I forbade it anyway. So I think it might be Tim Meredith. I think you're right, and I think Elizabeth has some explaining to do.
Let's find out.
Great guess. The answer is Tim Meredith.
Oh, someone's in trouble now. This was meant to be a Tim-free zone. I can't believe someone sneaked Tim into our glorious creation. It's soured for me now. It's like putting a bit of lime juice in milk. The whole lot's going to slowly ruin.
You have given him a whole show.
I keep paying him to make stuff, but that's not the point.
The final question of season 5. Who in a statement is described as insecure, aggressive, and desperate to be taken seriously?
Oh, I quite like that question. Insecure, aggressive, and desperate to be taken seriously.
It's going to be the archivist, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. I forget who was giving a statement about...
Rosie?
Yes, I think it is.
I think it's Rosie's panopticon statement.
I think it's Rosie's perception of the archivist. Yeah, I think that's it. Good work.
Final answer.
Terrific. The answer is, of course, the archivist.
Yeah. Good job. Good job. We're doing respectably now.
All right. I was a bit worried.
Just as an extra little treat, we've got a bonus round for you here.
Okay. Okay. These are going to be tricky.
What was the last in-studio recording date for season 5? So, you know, cast your mind back to pre-COVID times.
Dates?
Yikes.
I think it was you, Johnny.
Okay, hold on. It was the Saturday before Sasha's birthday party was on the 4th. It was the Saturday before that. So what was the Saturday before the 4th of March?
I don't know.
February sometimes has different numbers of days. I know that.
I don't think it was a leap year. I'm going to roll the dice that birthday party was on a Saturday, which we would have made Saturday the 4th of March, which means rolling that back. I'm going to say February the 25th. To be fair, this question is just two old men being like, no, so I think it was...
No, it was a Tuesday!
I think it was 1963.
It was a Tuesday because I always eat soup on a Tuesday. It could have been a stew, but if it was a stew, it might have been a Wednesday.
I hadn't gotten the citron just then, but I was still working. I was still working at Broad Street.
Sorry,
so
I just had a vision of us on a porch as irritating old men who refuse to listen to each other or anyone else and won't stop talking.
I mean, that's just us now.
Yeah, but there'll be a porch. That's the dream.
The answer is the 14th of March, 2020.
Really? There was one after the... I thought that the... No, fair enough.
You're talking to someone who deleted the entirety of production from my brain.
Yeah.
Which Magnus Archives cast or crew member struggles to listen to the show because it is too scary?
I mean, a bunch of them, I think.
Here's the thing. I know it's a bit of a thing with the fans that Bryn doesn't listen.
Oh, is it Alex?
No, it's not, because I don't get scared by horror. It'll be Bryn, because Bryn makes a point of saying specifically he doesn't listen because it's too scary, as opposed to everyone else who says they don't listen to it because we're talentless hacks who are getting in the way of the real creatives. So I think it'll be Bryn.
That's reasonable. Yeah.
The correct answer is, and I cannot believe you forgot, your producer, Lowry.
Oh, that is a foolish question.
Oh, that'll be it. Sorry, Lowry.
Well, I maintain that Bryn also says it's too scary. I query the question.
Sorry, Lowry.
Let's move on, shall we? In season 5, approximately how many individual SFX samples did Elizabeth use at least once?
How many sound effect samples?
This is going to be a very distressingly high figure.
I am going to say 5,000.
I'm having to think about order of magnitude, never mind how many. So samples that she used at least once. We did reuse some assets. So that's one of the tricks with audio drama is you can use a storm from a different one as a new storm in a different one if you add an extra element. But even then...
I am going to say 5,000.
I am going to say 3,851.
Ooh, wrong. The answer is roughly 1,000. 355.
Is that all?
I am better!
Amateur hour.
Also, I feel like that might be conservative, but it might be that she's talking only about new stuff that was introduced in season 5. Maybe it's because we reused more than previous.
I mean, it's a good start, Elizabeth. Call me when you've hit 5,000.
You shut your mouth, Johnny. I know. Half the time she's been running around with her recorder trying to find sounds in a pandemic, just being like, I can make this work. I can make this work. Poor woman.
Next question. Outside of Alex, which editor worked on the most episodes across all seasons?
Which editor is inside of Alex?
This is actually a surprisingly tricky question.
I feel like I want to say Elizabeth.
It could be Brock. Brock is the music editor who rarely gets paid attention, but the difference is he's done a lot, like a lot of edits. Yeah. In terms of hours, it'll be Elizabeth, but in terms of actual number of completed edits...
I'm going to defer to you on this one because obviously you understand all the production stuff kind of blend together to me, you know.
Oh, Johnny.
They're just one amorphous blob that I gift my genius to, and they've turned into something acceptable, you know.
It's definitely between Elizabeth or Brock. I am going to say something controversial and guess Brock by like one episode or something. But over the years, it's very difficult to pin. I think it's actually going to be Brock, but not by much.
Well, it's Brock's surname. You've just said Brock a lot.
Oh, sorry, Brock Winstead.
I'm going to say Elizabeth because I trust in Elizabeth.
Oh, now I'm the villain.
Because we're besties.
No, Brock. I'm going to say Brock. I'm going to say Brock Winstead. I'm going to say Brock, but not by much.
Point to you, Alex. The answer is Brock Winstead.
Oh,
Elizabeth,
yes!
You let me down. I believed in you.
Elizabeth has definitely spent the most amount of time working on the show, like categorically, but not
in such a way that earns me a point.
And the final question of this quiz, who is the last character to drop the F-bomb on this show?
Oh no, that's surprisingly tricky. I think it's Melanie... where he's like, you just want to stab Elias. And she's like, if you think that, you can f*** off out my tunnels on your high horse. I think that might be the final F-bomb.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's definitely in 199 because 200, a swear, would have lessened the impact.
We said bastard.
Yeah, well, no, but that's deliberate that it wasn't anything worse because it's a weirdly fine line to walk with swearing.
I don't believe there was any expletives throughout 200, even if it was like, oh no, as in like, oh shit, or whatever. I don't think there was anything like that.
I think it was Melanie saying to f*** off out her tunnels.
F*** off out my tunnels on your high horse. Yeah, I think that's it.
That's right. It's Melanie in episode 199. Brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, yes!
I mean, that would have been embarrassing if we hadn't, because it wasn't that long ago we wrote and recorded it.
Okay, so I realised that we were on the same team, but at the same time, I kind of want to know who won within our team, so...
I want to know how much I beat you by.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
It's important for the records.
Who's the MVP of this, quote, team?
Out of a possible 29 points, that's 20 for Johnny and 22 for Alex. Not that it's a competition at all.
Yes!
I don't think that's...
Yes, I think that is.
I think what you've
accurate.
Got to remember, though... Alex is a dirty cheat.
Johnny, it's fine. I'm fine with us being credited as a team when I privately know there's an extra couple of points kicking around there. And that's okay. That's okay, Johnny.
You have to remember is that they've edited out all the additional... There were like 10 more questions that I nailed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But they've edited it out because Alex threw a strop and they've got to make him look good. That's
oh, yeah, control history. That's the trick there, yeah. No, I'd like to give a special thanks to Brock for being the secret source behind this, not a win necessarily, that's a strong word, but this triumph, this monumental achievement, I don't know.
I would say embarrassment for you that you're putting such store by a quiz that doesn't even matter. Like, it's not, it's fine. You know, it was just for fun. It was just a little bit of post-season content that doesn't matter.
And on that, I think we should say bye. Bye, everyone.
Anyway, I've got to go and do something else now, something that is important. and not just a waste of my time. So, you know, bye, Alex.
So, that's it from me. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Stay tuned as we have even more bonus episodes coming your way over the next few weeks. Goodbye and thanks for listening.
This episode is distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 international license. For more information, visit rustyquill.com, tweet us at @TheRustyQuill, visit us on Facebook or email us at mail@rustyquill.com. Thanks for listening.
Na, noch keine Pläne fürs Wochenende? Besucht die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt in Freiburg mit euren Mädels, der Oma oder dem Knallertypen von nebenan. Wir lieben alle Jahrgänge. Entdeckt unsere interaktive Ausstellung bei der Erlebnistour mit Audioguide und einem Glas Sekt und genießt im Pavillon die ganze Welt von Rotkäppchen. Die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt, nur eine Sektlänge entfernt.
Billy Hindle here, the voice of Alice in the Magnus Protocol, and I'm here to tell you about From the Library of Jürgen Leitner, an upcoming novel available for pre-order right now at rustyquill.com/novel. Return to the world of the Magnus Archives in From the Library of Jürgen Leitner, an official prequel novel written by Nebula, World Fantasy and Aurora award-winning author Primi Mohammed, with the help of the Magnus Archives' own writer and lead voice, Jonathan Sims. From the Library of Jürgen Leitner explores an infamous organization from the Magnusverse for the first time, the perilous private library of the enigmatic collector Jürgen Leitner, where occult books are guarded and researched at a fatal cost. Leitner's library keeps the dangers of these books in check and the would-be readers safe, or so Leitner claims. For two of Leitner's employees, the risks are worth it. For Hugh Franklin, the library is a place to belong. For Sebastian Everett, the library is an opportunity to indulge arcane ambitions. Though their 10 years at the library were years apart, Hugh and Sebastian's stories unfold in parallel, and their footsteps echo down the same eerie aisles, caught in a web spun long before either ever heard the name Jürgen Leitner. Will they find a way out, or will the library consume them before it's too late? From the Library of Jürgen Leitner will be published on October the 27th, 2020. And is available for pre-order now. Visit rustyquill.com/novel for more information. That's rustyquill.com/novel.